You're listening to This Week in Fantasy Baseball. Hello, everyone. Welcome to This Week in Fantasy Baseball. I'm John Cook, joined by my co-host, Patrick Fitzgerald. We have kind of a grab bag episode again today. We're going to go over some injury news from spring training, talk about Patrick's article, actually, about hitters to target after pick 300, and then just look at some of the interesting things that we've learned over the past couple weeks from our own drafts that we've been doing. Patrick's been doing some online championship drafts. I'm in the middle of my TGFBI draft, and so we're going to talk a little bit about just what we're learning from some, you know, ADP numbers, well, you know, where guys are going, and just how value is being spread out throughout those drafts. But before we get to all of that, Patrick, how are you doing?
Hey, John, I'm doing pretty well. Like you said, I just finished my first OC draft of the year. I think it'll be first of two, hoping to have another good year after I was able to get in the top 30 in the overall last year, which was pretty awesome. Yeah, I'm looking forward to watching the WBC this weekend. Should be a lot of fun games, and regular season will hopefully be here before we know it. How are you?
I'm doing pretty well. Yeah, it's kind of weird being in the middle of a couple drafts. So I've got TGFBI going on right now, which is, again, you know, kind of like an industry league put on by Justin Mason. And then I'm in another industry league, Raz Slam, which is a best ball points league that's put on by, actually, I'm forgetting who puts on Raz Slam, but middle of those two drafts right now. So a lot of stuff going on with that. Raz Slam is kind of fun because I think two years ago I finished in the top 10 of Raz Slam, which is kind of nuts. It's put on by Raz Ball. Rudy Gamble's the guy who's kind of heading that stuff up. But it's just a crazy, like, 42 round best ball league, which is just, it's nuts. The playoffs is a really weird thing, too. I kind of lucked my way into the playoffs 2 years ago. Last year, I did not do so well. So it'd be kind of fun to see if I can do well again on points league. But beyond all that, I mean, it is kind of interesting just looking at how my early season strategy is going for drafting. And then, yeah, in a couple weeks, I think both my home leagues are drafting. So, yeah, a lot of interesting stuff going on right now.
Yeah, definitely easy to get your wires crossed when you got two different drafts going on. You think someone was taken, but it turns out it was in the other drafts, and you got to keep your roster straight.
Exactly. Yeah, and it's also kind of annoying, too, because in my TGFBI draft, I'm picking from the 2 spot in a 15 team. And then in my Raz Slam draft, I'm picking from the 11th spot in a 12-teamer. So just like thinking about like who's available at the turn is just also a little weird. But it is kind of nice that I'm at the turn in both of those leagues.
Yeah, that helps things go a little quicker for sure.
Yeah. You've got any home league drafts coming up that you're prepping for?
I just have one on the 21st. It is. It's an auction, so I'll probably have to do a little prep. We submitted our keepers last week, so, you know, we got all that up in the app. So now we got to see who's available, all that kind of stuff, you know, what positions need to target. But got Scooble has been my ace for a few years, and he's still on a good salary. So, you know, always feel like you got a good shot when he's your SP1.
Nice. Yeah, that auction drafts are always so much fun. They take a lot of time, and they're really, it's intensive for like 3 hours or something like that, but it is always a good time.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, but before we get into the rest of the episode, just a reminder, you can follow our podcast on Twitter at ThisWeekPL. You can send us your fantasy baseball questions to our email at thisweekplpod@gmail.com. Lastly, make sure you subscribe to or follow the podcast on whatever streaming platform you listen to. We're on all of them, Spotify, Apple, YouTube, wherever you listen to your podcast. Make sure you follow us and give a 5-star review if you enjoy the show. We are going to start with injuries again, just covering some big ones from the last couple days. Obviously, it's spring training, so people are picking up things here and there as the, you know, weeks go by. And it has been 2 weeks since our last podcast, so we're not going to cover everything. But it'd be useful to talk about some guys that are dealing with stuff in the past couple days, and then just kind of look at some players in the top 300 in terms of ADP who may not or won't be available on opening day. That's just important information, I think, to know when you're going into drafts, because some of these guys are falling in drafts because of their injury news. Some of them you might just be picking up regardless of where their ADP is right now, because they might be available by like the first week of opening day. But we're going to start off with Jeremy Peña. He's dealing with a fractured finger. It's actually just the tip of his finger, so it's not that severe of an injury. That being said, the Astros had said he's going to be reevaluated in 2 weeks. It's currently March 5th, so, you know, we are about 4 weeks away from opening day. So it might be in jeopardy there. I think the situation that would happen, though, I think Carlos Correa would probably just take his spot at shortstop, and Peña would probably be out at the most, you know, maybe a week. I don't even think he'd go on to the IL unless Houston, like, really needed to make a roster spot available. But it is kind of an interesting thing that's going on with Peña, so keep track on that. Josh Hader, his teammate, he's currently looking to return to the mound next week. He's been kind of slowly progressing, dealing with a biceps issue, but he's still behind schedule to be available on opening day. Patrick, with Hader's situation, is he a guy that you'd want to target in drafts at his current ADP, or is this something, a situation that you'd probably just rather stay away from?
This was a tough one I was trying to navigate during my draft. You know, I was looking for a closer too after I got Helsley around like pick 80, and I was thinking about going to Abreu, but it's like, you know, what happens if he closes for like 3 weeks and then he's just not worth it anymore in a 12-teamer? So I want to say Hader in like most recent drafts is going around like pick 90, 100, which I guess is like a 30-pick discount, 40-pick discount from a healthy Hader. So given the latest update, I think I would consider him there, but it's already so tough to draft a closer in the top 100, and especially if it's one that, you know, a setback could just kind of tank his season. It's a little scary. So I think I'd be open to it, but very price sensitive.
Yeah, I was just trying to figure out like what discount makes it worth it, because, you know, Hader was a lights out closer last season, but if he's hurt for, you know, more than a month, if, you know, let's just say it just takes him a little bit more slowly to come back, he gets one setback or something like that, then all of a sudden you're looking at only, you know, 5 months of an elite closer as opposed to six. And that's, you know, probably in the context of Hader, that's like what, maybe 5-6 saves that you're losing in a Roto league, which doesn't seem like a lot, but it could be the difference between a couple spots for sure in Roto. I think if you have an IL league and it's like a head-to-head daily league, it's probably, you know, you probably worry less about the impact of Hader on your roster. You can always, you know, pick up and drop guys, but in more of a Roto league or non-IL leagues, it's a little bit tougher to justify picking him up at his current ADP.
Yeah, it looks like this week in the NFBC, he's around 110, so I think I'd consider him around there. It wouldn't be a target necessarily, but I'd be open to it.
Sure. Another pitcher, Bryce Miller of Seattle. He received a PRP injection last week for some inflammation in his back, I believe. He's been cleared to resume throwing. It's still up in the air whether he's going to be available on opening day, but I don't think he's going to be out for more than a week past opening day, assuming he's already feeling well and is able to start throwing. Hunter Green, though, kind of the big news here. He's undergoing MRI on his right elbow. Last year, he also had some elbow issues, but it was confirmed last year that he didn't have a UCL tear. That being said, though, he's already feeling discomfort again in spring training. I don't think we've received any results yet on what is going on with his elbow. But yeah, is Green someone that right now you're just going to stay away from completely in drafts, or is he a guy like similar to Hader where you'd maybe draft him at a discount?
Yeah, I think I just want to see news. My interest in him would be pretty restricted to shallow leagues where, you know, using like 100 pick on him is not going to kill you, or like a league with playoffs where I feel pretty good about, you know, keeping a good team through the regular season. It's scary, you know, hard throwing pitcher, elbow issue, spring training. That could be, you know, you could get a zero from him. So I think you just got to wait and see. He was a guy I was kind of interested in at his price. So, you know, it's, I'm glad I didn't actually click on him, but it easily could have been someone on my team. So yeah, scary stuff.
Yeah, Green for sure is a guy who, when healthy, is a really, really good pitcher. You know, maybe not an SP1 level, but definitely a guy who's sniffing that tier for sure. But yeah, it's kind of unfortunate that he's just had to deal with injuries for, I mean, essentially his entire career, it feels like, at least. So hopefully he is able to come back healthy. Staying in the NL Central, Quinn Priester, he might not be available for opening day. He's dealing with some wrist discomfort. This opens a spot for someone in the rotation for like Logan Henderson, Kyle Harrison, Brandon Sproat. Probably two out of three of those guys end up making the opening day rotation if Priester's not ready. Any interest in any of those three? I know all of them have seen some time in the majors, but two of those guys, Harrison and Sproat, are kind of new to the Brewers, I believe. So Logan Henderson probably has a little bit of a leg up over the other two, but yeah, any interest in either of those three guys?
Yeah, I do think Henderson's role is most secure, like you said. But the Brewers, they play their cards so close to the vest. You know, we don't know who the closer is. We don't know what's going on with Brandon Woodruff. We don't know who they like better between Sproat and Harrison, right? It does seem like an open competition. I guess I would lean Harrison at this point. He has, you know, MLB experience more than Sproat does. He would be the only lefty in the rotation, you know, for whatever that's worth. And they have him. It seems like they've tinkered with his changeup a little bit, and he's getting actually some drop on his changeup, which is really unique and seems like it could be a big time weapon for him because he's always, you know, struggled to develop a secondary. So, yeah, I think I'm leaning Harrison. Maybe they can, you know, have a, you know, they worked a lot of magic with Chad Patrick last year, and, you know, I could see them doing something similar with Kyle Harrison. So, yeah, late flyer, I think I'd have some interest.
Yeah, that rotation is very interesting now that Freddy Peralta is not in there. Like, it's Freddy Peralta would have, you know, obviously anchored the rotation, but now they've got Brandon Woodruff essentially as their number one, Jacob Mizorowski as two, Chad Patrick at three, and then a combination of Logan Henderson, Kyle Harrison, Brandon Sproat, and Quinn Priester for spots four and five. So, you know, you subtract one ace, and all of a sudden, you know, it feels like you have a little bit of depth issues. So, of course, it's the Brewers, right? They can do some magic with their pitchers. So we'll see how that all turns out.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a lot of 5-inning starts and 2 to 3-inning relief outings from like DL Hall and Aaron Ashby, you know, guys like that. They have looks like five lefties in the bullpen. So honestly, it feels intentional, right? A bunch of righties in the rotation and then lefties in the bullpen, you know, makes some good matchups for their guys.
Yeah, and guys who are not unfamiliar to long relief situations too, like you kind of mentioned with, you know, Ashby and Hall for sure. And then finally, Kyle Stowers of the Marlins. He's dealing with a mild hamstring strain, but he's already kind of doing baseball activities, swinging bats, playing catch, and running the bases. To be determined whether he'll be ready for opening day, though. You know, Stowers, you know, it kind of broke out a little bit last season with a really solid year in Miami. And, you know, he's still probably a valuable guy, even in like three outfielder leagues to look at. So just something to consider, I guess, as you are drafting this year is, you know, still important to get good outfielder twos and threes, even if, you know, outfielder is very log jammed at the front with really elite players. All right, we want to just look at some players in the top 300 who may not or will not be available on opening day. Just a lot of these guys. You know, like I said at the beginning, might be only out for a week, but it's still important to kind of check on them. Starting out with Corbin Carroll and Francisco Lindor, both those guys dealing with a hammy bone fracture. And I believe Jackson Holliday has the same injury as well. All three of those currently reporting that, you know, they'll most likely be available either on opening day or soon after opening day. And as far as I could tell, really have not taken a hit to their ADP at all. Corbin Carroll, still drafted very much in the first round. Lindor a little bit later, which is actually surprising me a little bit, considering that he was the one that seemed to have the most positive outlook out of the three in terms of being ready by opening day. But it seems like he's maybe dropped like half a round, to a round at least in some drafts. Hunter Green, as we mentioned, and Josh Hader, both of them kind of dealing with this injury news. So both of them have been, you know, dropping in drafts recently. Jeremy Peña, as we mentioned, also. Blake Snell's kind of weird here because it's kind of he's just slowly being brought along, and the Dodgers also have no rush to bring him along. Although looking at Rookie Sasaki's spring training outings, maybe they have something to worry about just a little bit about not having a full 5-man rotation. But yeah, Blake Snell. Any thought there about where he should be going right now? Because he's falling in a lot of drafts that I'm seeing.
Yeah, I'm seeing like 140 this week in the NFBC, which is like five picks behind teammate, you know, similar type of guy, Tyler Glasnow. Snell, I think I'd consider him at that price. But yeah, you never project him for more than like 150 innings, but now you know it's just basically out of the realm of possibility. So, you know, he has to essentially, you know, pitch debut by like the beginning of May for you to feel like he's going to return value. So yeah, I think I just prefer to get, you know, more volume from my pitchers in that range. I guess if I felt super stable, I could spec on it. Like my most recent draft, I took Crochet and Webb were my first two SPs, and I feel really stable, you know, good volume and quality there. Maybe I'd go for like a Glasnow or Snell in that range, but yeah, I'm not necessarily eager. You know, the Dodgers only care about the regular season a little bit, it seems like, you know, so you kind of got to be aware of that.
Yeah, I mean, for context, right now, based on all 22 ADP TGFBI drafts, Blake Snell has not been taken at all. And some of these are up to pick like 160. For context, like my own personal draft in TGFBI, we're on pick 153 and Blake Snell is still there. So feels like people do not want to get involved in that right now.
Yeah, especially at 15. Like, the end of your rotation at a 15 is pretty suspect in your starting lineup. So then you're drafting a guy who you're going to have to take out of your starting lineup. So it's you know, it's pretty demanding.
Yeah. Brandon Woodruff, not as bad of an injury outlook right now, but his history with injuries has certainly matched that of Blake Snell's. But it seems like there seems to be a more positive outlook on him and being able to at least make it within maybe the first couple weeks of opening day, if not the first week of opening day. Any fear about Woodruff and, you know, just being unavailable?
Yeah, less fear than Snell, but he's also probably not quite as good on a per inning basis. So it is a little scary. You know, that shoulder surgery that he had, that was a really serious injury and he missed a ton of time. And a lot of guys really struggle when they come back from shoulder injuries. So yeah, it's good that he, you know, showed something, and he really was a pitcher more than a thrower, you know, kind of like he used to be last year. So he showed he can have a 5-pitch arsenal and, you know, spot up and get a lot of outs. So I think, yeah, I think maybe I would lean Woodruff over Snell, you know, given that they're kind of going in a similar spot, but I think I would prefer like Glasnow to them too. You know, Glasnow is a ticking time bomb, but he's pitching right now, at least you can say.
Right. Availability, right? That's the best ability. A couple more hurt pitchers, Zach Wheeler, Shane Bieber, Carlos Rodon. Wheeler is, he is throwing bullpens, but he is likely starting the season on the injured list. So he's going to miss at least a week and a half, if not a little bit longer. Shane Bieber is kind of just dealing with some fatigue, basically from last season. It's kind of the way that they're describing it, forearm soreness. But he's also going to be starting the season on the injured list. And then Carlos Rodon is recovering from elbow surgery. He already is going to be slotted to kind of make his debut probably in May as opposed to April. So all these guys definitely going to miss time. Wheeler is, you know, the one I think that is getting drafted earlier than the other two for sure. I got Wheeler on my TGFBI team. But any thoughts there about whether... I think it's kind of interesting when you compare them all to Blake Snell, because I think Snell, you know, people might, you probably argue out of those group of five pitchers, he probably has the best talent right now. Wheeler obviously is very close, I think, if not on par. But it seems like Snell is getting maybe a bigger hit compared to, you know, his ADP than the other four guys here. But is there any positive outlook really on any of these of Wheeler, Bieber, or Rodon to kind of pick them up in drafts at their current ADP?
Yeah, Wheeler's been throwing bullpens, it sounds like. You know, it doesn't seem like we'll see him in spring training. Rodon kind of on a similar timeline, so, you know, maybe early May for those two. Bieber just seems like it wasn't, you know, as serious of an injury. Obviously, there's a forearm strain, but he's further behind. You know, he's just been throwing. We haven't heard anything about bullpens. I took him... He's like the second to last pick on my OC. So, you know, pick 340 or whatever, you know, I felt like, oh, maybe he'll be starting a rehab assignment soon after opening day and that'll end up looking pretty good. And if, you know, he has a setback, you know, I'll feel okay about dropping him. Wheeler, yeah, I think Wheeler, he was a value like early in draft season. I think at this point he's going like pick 125, which for a good pitcher, but someone who you don't know exactly what the form's going to be, I feel like it's more of a fair price at this point.
Yeah, Bieber's going more in like the 180s, and then Rodon's kind of going more 190s, 200s. So really the injury is kind of already priced into that ADP, so to speak. So if you're getting a guy there, you're kind of expecting, you already know, right, what the injury history is with those guys and that they're going to be missing time. We already kind of mentioned Kyle Stowers being out for a little bit. Going back to pitchers, Merrill Kelly is also dealing with some injuries here. Looks like he is throwing bullpens, though. He is not starting on opening day, but that doesn't necessarily mean he's going on the injury list, so it might look like he's only missing one start. So I think his kind of ADP of 235 is more of a skills thing rather than a reaction to his injury. Bryce Miller, as we mentioned, kind of in the similar spot in that 230 to 250 ADP range there. But yeah, if Bryce Miller just misses like one one start. Do you like him better than Merrill Kelly, or, you know, would you kind of just say both those guys are about the same in your view?
Yeah, there's definitely very different players going in a similar range. You know, Bryce Miller has super high upside, but he was awful last year. I was interested in him at his price before the injury happened, so I guess if there is a fall, but the news isn't terrible, I would be interested. I think more of a league depth kind of thing. I think 12 team, I would go with Miller, you know, more of an upside player, and then 15, Kelly's a little bit more stable. But at the same time, you know, it does feel like Kelly's skills are, you know, he's kind of walking the tightrope a little bit. And if he's not 100%, you know, that could, it could get ugly quick. You know, he's a guy who the value is in the volume and the decent but not amazing ratio. So it's a little bit of a fine line for him. So I'd tread lightly around Merrill Kelly, I think.
Yeah. I mean, last year's numbers looked pretty decent. Less than a strikeout per inning, but not so much so. Still finished with 167 strikeouts, 184 innings, 3.5 ERA, 1.11 whip. Like, those are really solid numbers from, you know, just a guy that's on your roster, but you don't necessarily expect to be an ace. Edwin Uceda, the only one I'm only kind of mentioning him here because it kind of makes the bullpen situation for the Rays a little bit more interesting. I would say Griffin Jacks is probably getting a little bit more helium right now with him kind of taking a little bit more of the closer shares in Tampa Bay. And so Edwin Uceda not being available for opening day kind of means that maybe Griffin Jacks's ADP is actually going to be going up. And then Gerrit Cole coming back from Tommy John. He is planning to throw some live BP at the end of, or actually had thrown live BP, I think, last week. But for him, you know, probably returning after 2 months of the season. So his current ADP right now is in the late 200s, like 270-ish. Would you target Cole, or is there a situation where you target Cole in your drafts, knowing that he's going to be basically missing at least 10 starts?
Yeah, I thought pretty hard about it. In my draft that just happened, he was out there at like 280, which is past ADP, and it was interesting, but I had taken Shane McClanahan at like 210 or something, and I felt like I couldn't pair those guys. You know, I think you can take one of those shots, but probably not two. So yeah, I think at his price, it is pretty interesting. If you feel like, you know, you can weather the storm before he comes back. Yeah, I don't think he's been placed on the 60-day IL yet. He probably will, but he hasn't yet, at least. So that, you know, that tells me the Yankees are at least somewhat encouraged by his progress.
Yeah. Quinn Priester, we mentioned. Troy Melton, I think just kind of an interesting thing there. We talked about Detroit's rotation last episode. For Melton, he's not going to be available by opening day, which I think maybe clears things up a little bit in the Tigers' rotation. So I think that's the only reason why he's even interesting to note. And then Jordan Westberg, dealing with, I'm forgetting what he's dealing with an elbow sprain because he's got a UCL tear,
yeah,
which does not necessarily matter as much when you're a hitter, but I think it's also a little bit tougher. Is it his throwing arm?
Yeah.
It's his right elbow, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So like, how is this going to affect him? I feel like he's not going to be a primary DH in Baltimore, so he's going to be less effective as a third baseman. So I'm really curious how Baltimore is navigating this, because right now they're saying he's not going to be on the injured list.
Yeah, I think they said he's going to miss April, but that's all they've said. So they haven't they haven't given a timeline beyond that. It sounds like maybe he got a PRP injection, and maybe he'll just try to, you know, get through it and get, you know, TJ in the off season, just because it's more of a 6 to 9 month recovery thing for hitters.
Yeah.
But yeah, he was not drafted in the OC that I was in. So he was at the top of the board for a long time, you know, seeing him go by, and nobody took a shot, which I didn't want to either. You know, someone who, he's a good player, but he's not a great fantasy player, and you know, he's going to miss a month minimum. So yeah, it's a little scary. I'm definitely, you know, I'm hoping Kobe Mayo can fill in and, you know, take that opportunity and run with it. But Jordan Westberg is a really nice glue guy, so it's gonna be tough not having him in the opening day lineup.
Yeah, and it does make third base kind of a weird situation after, I mean, we were just talking last time, like basically after Matt Chapman, it's just the Wild West, right? It's like, it's a bunch of guys who could be decent. I think Westberg is on that, you know, kind of like, is he better than Chapman? Is he worse than Chapman? We don't really know. He's kind of in the same level there. And all of a sudden, knowing that he's at least out for a month, if not longer, if this whole UCL thing doesn't go correctly, it really kind of pushes up guys like Barger, Royce Lewis, even like the Japanese guys, Okamoto and Murakami kind of have a little bit of a bump because now Westberg is out and you really need a third baseman or a pretty decent corner infielder. So,
yep, thin position getting even thinner.
Yeah. And then finally, Jackson Holliday, we kind of mentioned him a little bit earlier, also dealing with that hamate bone fracture. Looks like he will be getting this beginning the season on the injured list. But for him, as a second baseman, do you think there's still value in drafting him at ADP? He's currently going at in the 140s. Knowing he's going to miss at least 2 weeks, is that a guy that you'd still like to target, you know, maybe before pick 200?
Yeah, it has been trending like a little closer to 200. I think around 180 since, you know, this news happened and he is doing baseball activity. So, yeah, I think like right around 200, I'd be interested. But more if like my first second baseman is kind of a fringe guy. So it'd be nice to have another option. Like in my most recent draft, I drafted Bryson Stott, who I do like, but I know he's not a top tier second baseman. So if Holliday had kept falling, you know, I would have considered doubling up on the position there just to, you know, have a couple options. Yeah, I think he'll be back in April. So yeah, I'd consider it.
Okay. Well, that is going to be it for the injury news. We are now going to cover your article. It's kind of the second year we're doing this, so it's kind of fun. But hitters to target after pick 300. We're going to cover four of the hitters specifically. And speaking of second baseman, we're going to start off with Andrés Giménez of the Blue Jays, currently 325 ADP. What do you like about Giménez and what he offers, you know, this late in the draft?
Yeah, so definitely a couple of my, you know, recommendations in the article. There's 10 of them total, but a couple we'll talk about today take the form of, you know, you're buying low off a down year. Giménez was two stints on the IL last year, and he wasn't good when he was playing, right? He hit 210, seven homers, 12 steals in 101 games, which was, you know, just a disappointment for his first year in Toronto. But there was definitely some bad luck going on. You know, he had a 239 BABIP, which his career average is 294. And he was dealing with an ankle sprain, and he said, you know, he basically played through it when he came back from the IL. He's dealing with pain in the high ankle sprain. So he didn't steal a ton of bags, you know, not as many as we're used to from him. So I think off season, you know, pain free, feeling better, and the volume too, right? The projections have him around like 130, 140 games. But if he's healthy, I think he's going to play shortstop every day for Toronto. So he already has second base eligibility, which is the more important one for sure, but it won't hurt that he's going to gain shortstop, you know, close to right away. So yeah, I think I feel really good about him getting 20 steals, maybe even pushing 25 and the average, you know, some positive regression there. And then Toronto's going to score a lot, right? So he's going to get decent volume, even though he's not going to hit, you know, close to the top of the lineup, probably more like seventh or eighth.
Yeah. I mean, he is only just a year removed from a 30 steal season. He actually had two straight 30 steal seasons for Giménez. So Toronto's not necessarily a team that runs a lot, so that, you know, there is maybe a little reality of that. But yeah, I mean, if you're able to get, you know, 20 plus steals from a guy this late in the draft, at a, you know, pretty decent position like second base, yeah, there's definitely value there in picking him up. Unfortunately, he's, you know, kind of a little late in the order. So nothing you can do about that, but he's not going to get pushed for playing time, at least on that team right now. I think Davis Schneider is the only other infielder on that team, and he has no reps at shortstop. So, yeah, it looks like at least for Giménez that the shortstop position is his to lose.
Right. I think really Ernie Clement's the only other shortstop on the roster, and it seems like he's going to play a decent amount of second base and maybe third or maybe outfield. He's playing outfield a little bit for Team USA, so he's going to be more of a Swiss Army knife. So, yeah, I think, you know, Giménez is, it's stable. And yeah, like you said, if he was just a shortstop eligible guy, wouldn't be too interested, but you know, second base, you're going to need to have some deeper options there to look at. So yeah, I think he's going to bounce back this year and just kind of put together, you know, more of those seasons we're used to from him, you know, 10 to 15 homers and 30 steals and get that batting average more like 250.
Yeah. All right, moving on next to Jeff McNeil, who is in a new spot this year. He is now in Sacramento with the A's. He is going to be batting fifth right now, it looks like, on roster resource on a very, very good team. Nick Kurtz, Shea Langeliers, Soderstrom, and Brent Rooker are the first four in front of him. He's going to have dual eligibility as well as a second baseman outfielder, and he's going pick 340. But yeah, what do you like about McNeil and, you know, kind of his new spot?
Yeah, so most of what I like about him is what you just hit on. You know, he's going to hit right in the middle of a good lineup that plays in a fantastic home park, which is a big upgrade for him, right? Citi Field, not always the best place to hit. So, yeah, he's got the double eligibility. He's going to be playing, I think, almost every day. You know, he might sit against a couple lefties, but I think he'll be in there against some of them. And he has kind of transformed himself. You know, he used to be an average first, not necessarily slap hitter, but someone who never really struck out. And he still never strikes out, but now he lifts the ball a ton, which is kind of weird because he has below average, you know, exit velocity and hard hit and all that type of stuff. But he pulls the ball in the air really well. And, you know, that's going to maximize his power potential, especially in Sutter Health Park, which I think it's top five for run scoring and for left-handed power. So, yeah, I like his chances of, you know, I think he was a 12 homer guy last year, but I think he could push, you know, 18, 20 in a park like this. So I drafted him 27th, 28th round, something like that. My draft that just finished up, and, you know, he's my backup second baseman, and I can plug him in the outfield and, yeah, maybe like a home streamer, you know, type of guy when he's going right. So, yeah, I think McNeil's getting a little bit underrated just because, you know, he's kind of an old veteran who hasn't been amazing in a while, but he still has a pretty nice, well-rounded skill set, and obviously it's a good situation too.
Yeah, I mean, I would really love if McNeil went back to his kind of like batting champ average days, but you know, those days are probably a little bit behind us. But yeah, it is impressive that his walk rate, he's been able to improve his walk rate by a significant amount, 10.6% last year. Again, moving from a notable pitcher's park, right, like Citi Field, to Sutter Health, which should help a lot for him. And then, yeah, kind of speaking about the splits thing you mentioned, he's got a very similar WRC. He had a pretty similar WRC plus last year versus righties and lefties. 109 against lefties, and then, yeah, 109 against lefties, 111 against righties. So basically near identical splits against different handedness pitchers. So, yeah, probably not a lot of things that are pushing him away from playing time with the A's as well. That's probably a nice thing for him. And again, he can play all over too. So if they just need him to like spell different players on their roster, he can take that time and you know, be that type of player for the A's.
Right. They do have Andy Ibañez they brought in, and he's like a classic lefty masher infielder. So they don't have him in a platoon on roster resource, but I do think he'll sit against some lefties, but I don't think it'll be enough to, you know, make him like a pure platoon player. And like you said, he does get a little bit of a bump in the OBP leagues. You know, he was pushing like 340 OBP last year, which is pretty solid.
Yeah. All right. Tyler O'Neill, who I really love, except for the fact that I believe he was hurt for a good chunk of last year, if I can remember.
Oh, yeah.
Which I hated because I think I drafted him in a couple leagues and then just immediately was just like, oh, man. It is kind of funny, actually, that they didn't necessarily replace Tyler O'Neill, but they picked up my other favorite outfielder in Taylor Ward. So it's going to be interesting to see how, you know, they kind of shuffle around the outfield in Baltimore. Nonetheless, though, currently going at a 405 ADP, so, you know, probably not getting picked up in the majority of drafts still. But what do you like about Tyler O'Neill, considering that, like, right now his spot in the starting lineup is not guaranteed?
Yeah, it's tough. The injuries, you know, he did not make a great name for himself with the Orioles fans last year. Orioles Twitter, you know, gave him the nickname of the General, as in general soreness, because of how many games he missed with general soreness. So I'm hoping he bounces back. You know, he's under a pretty big contract for the next couple of years. And there was a lot of bad luck last year, you know, kind of a similar story to Jimenez, even though he's a much different player. 218 BABIP versus 303 career. He underperformed his ex-WOBA by so much. Career best strikeout rate, which you would not expect when you saw that he hit 199. So those are all things that I think, you know, he'll bounce back. He's also talked about how he slimmed down a little bit, you know, to try to prevent some kind of soft tissue injuries and that type of thing, which is good to hear because, you know, he still has enough power to spare, right? He can afford to lose a few pounds and that's fine. The playing time is the toughest thing, like you mentioned. The Orioles, they have some injuries, but it's the infield, right? So the outfield is still pretty crowded. It's like Dylan Beavers and probably Basayo at DH or some guys that he's going to have to contend with for playing time. But I do think if he's going well, you know, he'll be out there 3 out of every 4 games, right? They're going to want to keep him healthy, so he's not going to be an everyday guy. But if he's hitting well, you know, he's going to be in there almost every day. And when he's in a heater, he doesn't hurt you in any one category, right? The batting average is a little low, but everything else, you know, he can give you power, speed, RBIs, all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, he's one of the few guys in my article that is more like a volatile, high ceiling play as opposed to more of like an accumulator. Because, you know, a lot of guys, the playing time is hard to come by after pick 300. So, yeah, I mean, we could easily see him, you know, get back to form, or he could be on the IL, you know, twice by May. So that's just kind of how it goes with Tyler O'Neill.
Yeah, he has not played more than 138 games in a season. That was 2021 in St. Louis. He did hit 34 homers there, and then that 2024 season in Boston, which was so much fun to have him on your fantasy team. He only played 113 games of that one, but did hit 31 homers last year through 54 games, hit 9 homers. So this is a guy who, you know, if he played every day, would have 30 homer power, but he's probably not going to get to, you know, 600. He probably won't get to 600 plate appearances this year. So maybe he's at like a, you know, 20 to 25 homers from him, which, you know, if you get that at pick 400, that's not too bad. It's just, you know, are you going to be able to start him when he is available, you know, depending on your league type. I think he makes a lot of sense in daily leagues. I think in weekly leagues, his unavailability, basically, or the lack of playing time is probably going to hurt him a little bit.
Yeah, I think he'll be in there, you know, every lefty and maybe half the righties, or when he's going well, you know, 2 out of every 3 righties. So you are going to kind of have to monitor him a little bit. But yeah, he's looked locked in spring training, you know, take that for whatever it's worth, you know, probably just a little bit. But yeah, I think he'll, you know, have a bounce back. And I do like the energy around the team a lot more this year than, you know, last year was a tough season.
Yeah. And I'll just say, just for the Orioles, just make sure you play him on opening day, because he's going to hit a homer anyway. So get the first one out of the way, and then we can see how the rest of the player time works out.
Yeah.
So, all right. And then last name on the list, Mike Yastrzemski, who is in a new spot this year, I believe, right? Yeah, he is with Atlanta. Pick 430. I guess the news with Yastrzemski, I don't know if he was necessarily going to be fighting for playing time, but Jerks and Profar out for the season because of PEDs, opening up another spot in the outfield for another player. So maybe Yastrzemski is able to kind of slot into that spot. But yeah, what do you like about Yaz and what he offers, even in his age 36 season, I believe, for him? So yeah, what do you like about Mike?
Yeah, very much a late bloomer, you know, hard to believe that he's kind of already in the tail end of his career, but he made a lot of changes last year. You know, his end of season line was kind of similar to what it usually is, 15 to 20 homers, 5 to 10 steals, you know, 230 to 240 average, but it was a career second highest walk rate for his career, lowest strikeout rate by a mile, actually 19%. And a lot of his damage came in the second half, right? He got traded from the Giants to the Royals at the deadline, and he was just fantastic for the Royals. He hit, you know, half his home runs for them and like a third of his games. And clearly, I think, benefited from not being in San Francisco anymore, which really just kills lefty power. So going to Atlanta, it's kind of about a neutral park, but it's top 10 for lefty power. So I think he's going to be able to tap into that, and, you know, even in a platoon role, get to 20 homers. He's also already got 3 bombs in spring training, which, you know, that's not why I put him in the article, but it doesn't hurt to see that. And yeah, I think he's going to get bumped up in the lineup a little bit with the Profar injury. You know, maybe he'll get to like 5th. And he also pulls the ball in the air a lot, so he's going to be able to, you know, kind of outperform his decent but not amazing batted ball data. So yeah, I think if you're, you know, looking for a power guy who you can kind of slide in and out of your lineup depending on matchups late in the draft, you know, I think Yaz is definitely a guy to look at.
Yeah, and you know, he is going to most likely be on the big side platoon, right? He's this number is insane. A 20 WRC plus against lefties, which is like, that's incredible. I didn't realize he could even be that bad. So yeah, most likely Atlanta's going to be motivated to not start him against lefties, but you know, that still only comes up ever so often. So he is still going to get a decent number of plate appearances on that team. And even though that lineup maybe isn't as scary as it was a couple years back, you know, even he's batting fifth, I think right now Roster Resource has him batting fifth behind Austin Riley. So still a lot of opportunities for him to get RBIs as well in that lineup.
Yeah. I think the Profar injury, it does hurt the ceiling of the offense, but I think for him, it's a little bit of an upgrade. You know, he gets to bump up a little bit. There is a decent amount of left-handed pitching in the division, you know, and you think about the Phillies and the Mets and stuff, but I think he'll still be able to get in there enough to have good scoring periods, even if, you know, you're not going to want him in your lineup every single day for sure.
Yeah. And that's why he's going pick 430, right? All right, well, we are going to look at some takeaways from drafts. We're going to start out with TGFBI, and if we've got time, we'll talk about the online championship as well. If not, we'll cover that in the next episode. But yeah, just kind of a little rundown on TGFBI. So there's 22 different leagues in them. It's a 15-team league and no IL spots. And, you know, you're just kind of with a bunch of industry guys. I have the luck or maybe the... unluck of being in a league with Eric Samulski, Nick Pollock, Joe Rico, Rick Graham. Like, it's just an absolute like murderer's row of just guys who are really good at this thing. So yeah, that's kind of fun. But I don't know, some early takeaways that I had, I don't know if you had them similar that you saw in your OC draft, which is a 12-teamer, so a little bit different makeup, but you know, still kind of similar ideas. Closer value, I kind of want to talk about that first. So we had 9 closers picked by the end of the 4th round, and then ultimately 19th closers picked by the end of the 10th. It really seems like there's a premium on closers this year. And even though it feels like there's a lot of guys who could get like 20, 30 saves, it does feel like there's not an overemphasis, but just a really desire to get one of those really top guys who help you not just in the saves department, but also help you in all the other categories as well. And I was a little surprised that they were going that quick. I don't feel like they've gone that quick in previous years.
Yeah, the closer inflation this year is pretty crazy. It's not the only reason that I don't play in 15-team leagues on NFBC, but it definitely doesn't make me want to join them. Is like, you know, if you want an elite closer, you have to draft him in the 2nd round. It's pretty crazy. So yeah, it's the type of thing where you kind of just, I guess, have to swallow your pride. And if you want the elite guy, you got to go get him and, you know, make up for it later in the draft. It looks like it's not as crazy in the 12 teams, like you said. It looks like 4 closers were taken in the first 60 picks. So a lot different, you know, than the 15 teamer. So yeah, it feels like a more healthy, you know, more healthy range in the 12, but yeah, there's a lot of teams with uncertain closing situations. So people are looking for that kind of certainty, especially in the draft and hold leagues. It was crazy because obviously you can't add closers as they emerge during the year. So people are just turning to saves, you know, as soon as they can get them.
Yeah. Yeah. In the 2nd round, we had Mason Miller, Edwin Diaz, and Andrés Muñoz all go within 5 picks of each other. So it was also a league that he had Scooble, Skeens, and Crochet picked in the 1st round too. I would have expected at least one of those guys. I would not have expected all 3 to get taken, but it is a 15 teamer. So like you said, there's obviously more picks in a round as well. So, you know, Crochet, who is kind of like this fringe, you know, guy to pick on the 1-2 turn in a 12 team, obviously he's probably going to get taken in the 1st round of the 15 teamer. Starting pitch value also is kind of interesting. Like there seems to be like a very clear, like kind of AB tier, you know, or just A tier of like 10 to 15 pitchers. Feels like it kind of ends at, I don't know, like Cole Reagans, where it's like these elite ace guys. And then the kind of the next tier, kind of your really solid, solid guys. So like Logan Webb's an example of that for me. You know, George Kirby, some interesting picks like Kyle Bradish and Joe Ryan at the end of the 5th round. Nolan McClain got taken at the end of the 6th. You know, this is also where Framber goes. Nick Pivetta went in the 6th round, which I thought was kind of a little high. I was hoping to get him, actually. And then Nick Pollock actually took Pivetta for me, which I was kind of annoyed by. But it seems to be like, yeah, there's kind of like 3 kind of groups of pitchers. There's like your really elite tier, ace tier guys. Your second, like, you know, really, really solid guys that you rely on as SP2s, SP3s. And then there's just kind of this long range of, like, guys who are good at, like, a couple categories, but don't offer you everything in all four. Obviously, that's why they're, you know, falling down in the draft. And then it's kind of these injury dudes, too, like Glasnow, Wheeler, Drew Rasmussen's here, Sandy Alcantara's here. But pitching just feels like there's a lot of meh, but you can kind of like wait on it a little bit and you would get like a lot of guys who are very similar in like picks 100 to 200 who won't necessarily hurt you, but they also won't necessarily make your pitching elite either.
Yeah, it's like pick 80 to like pick 120. It's just like it's a little bit light on starting pitching and also just scary guys like Chase Burns and Spencer Strider and those type of guys where you don't really know what you're getting. I'm okay to like kind of sit that range out in terms of starting pitchers. You know, maybe get a reliever there and some hitters. I like to have probably two pitchers by like pick 80. You know, either a closer and a starter or two starters. In my draft it was like I kind of sat out pitching for a couple of rounds, 9 and 10, and then Sonny Gray in round 11. And then Shota in round 14. So those are the type of guys I'm kind of happy to let most of the hyped up, you know, rookie arms like Mizorowski and McLean go to other people and, you know, just get hitters there. It is. There does seem to be a little bit of a gap and it's only going to get worse, right? There's just pitchers don't get healthier really as the year goes on, right? More and more guys drop. So you do feel like you kind of need insurance, especially when you're drafting, you know, this far away from the season. I guess we're getting close now, but, you know, you can probably assume that at least one of your pitchers is going to get hurt between now and the start of the season, unfortunately.
Yeah. Like, I don't love my start in terms of pitchers, but it was kind of dictated by the guys who were available or the guys who weren't available because they kept on getting taken. So I currently have Glasnow, Wheeler, and Luis Castillo, and it's just like I'm going to have to build a team of, like, innings eaters, like, after this. So it's like, this is like a team that I'm legitimately considering. Like, do I take Zach Allen and his horrible ratios? Because at least he's going to give me like 180 innings, right? Like all of a sudden the guys like Tanner Bibee who are so boring and have bad ratios are like, no, like I need a guy like this because I just need volume right now at this point. Because all the like cool volume guys are gone. So,
right. That's one of the tough things about like, you know, the closer inflation, right? You want to get at least one closer there and then you see the fallout of that, right? The fallout of that is you don't have, you know, you have one fewer starter that you probably would have taken in that range. So you have to, you know, you kind of have to calibrate as you go. But at least it's, you know, that everyone's dealing with the closer inflation, right? So it's sort of a zero sum game at the end of the day. But yeah, it's tough.
Yeah, I think my unfortunate situation was that I ended up at the end of the closer run, so I got Chapman on my team. I would have loved to get someone like, Devin Williams or Duran if they fell all the way to me, but that just wasn't going to happen. So I settled for Chapman. But then that also meant that, you know, I missed out on guys like Logan Webb or, you know, missed out on guys like Yuri Perez or, you know, George Kirby. And so, yeah, it is what it is.
Yeah, I mean, at least you're going to get a lot of strikeouts from Chapman, right?
That's true.
He's a reliever, but he'll make up for some of that deficit.
Yeah, it definitely helps with that. And then one thing I'm kind of noticing, right? Like, so second base and third base, we always talk about, like, how bad those positions are. I mean, we were just literally talking about feeling good about drafting Andrés Giménez in, like, 300. It's not a very top-end heavy position, but it seems to be pretty deep. So through the end of 9 rounds, we've got, or at least in my draft, we've got only 6 second basemen and 6 third basemen drafted. I think partially the psychology is that there's just so much parity after the top few guys that there's less urgency to just grab a guy because you can just feel fine with anyone you have from like second baseman number 4 to second baseman number 15, right? They're all just kind of like, yeah, they're good in their own different ways. And you're really just picking a guy based on maybe where you need help in the specific category. So kind of understanding that, would you rather be able to spend on like maybe a top shortstop or top outfielder, top pitcher, rather than getting a guy like Jazz or Cattell, or maybe getting a guy like Junior Caminero or a guy like Manny Machado, and then just be willing to take a guy like, in my case, like Matt Chapman at third base? Or would you rather try to go for one of those top third baseman guys, and then, you know, build, knowing that outfield has a lot of depth, build out the rest of your team kind of later without having to worry about picking up a second baseman or a third baseman later.
Yeah, for me, I really just, I try to be open-minded, especially in a slow draft where, like, I have time to research, which is what I've done so far. I think in a fast draft, you have to have a little bit more of a positional plan because, you know, you need to have, yeah, you just need to be a little bit more locked in and things move more quickly. But I think if you're in a slow draft, you know, just kind of see how the board falls to you. Take your time, right? Like, in this draft, I did kind of do the late second base, third base, right? Matt Chapman I got and Bryson Stott, right? Those are around 13 and 15. So those are kind of the last, close to the last options I felt, you know, decent about at the position. And I actually had two shortstops, right? I had Gunnar Henderson in the beginning of the second round. And then Corey Seager was falling down the board and I got him at like pick 110, which just felt like an awesome, you know, opportunity to get a guy who is a little injury prone, but, you know, could be really good. So yeah, I think it just depends on the draft for me. You know, I have Cattell in my keeper league and I took him in a different draft in the third round, I think it was. So I'm definitely open to it if it feels right. I really like Austin Riley too. I think he's going to have a good bounce back season. So yeah, I think it's more like there are certain guys that I am sort of interested in, but I'm not necessarily going to push them up the board because I feel like you're already paying enough of a premium for the position. So if they're there at price and I feel good about their production, I'll go for it, but I'm not going to, you know, do anything crazy.
Yeah, I really like Austin Riley at kind of at the end of that third baseman top tier. He's probably tier two more accurately, but you know, I like him a lot, but you know, that he just didn't fall to me. And then second base, yeah, I'm kind of with you. I'm hopefully this episode comes out before the rest of this draft gets back to me. But I'm really hoping to pick up Bryson Stott. Mm-hmm. I think he offers a lot of decent help in all categories. Like, you know, you'd love the average to be a little higher, but, you know, gives you a good amount of homers and steals, and getting that value at, you know, basically, well, right now he's at pick 180. I don't know if he's going to go a little higher than that. But yeah, I feel like he offers a lot of value compared to a lot of the other guys at his position. I mean, Ozzie Albies, very similar where you're kind of hoping it works out, but the average isn't as good for him, even though he's, you know, probably the team makeup is very similar in the guys around them. And then after that, it's just kind of got like one category guys, right? Like Xavier Edwards, really good at average and stolen bases, doesn't really offer much else beyond that. Brandon Lowe on a new team, so who knows how that's going to hurt his runs in RBI, but, you know, he can obviously mash a lot of homers. And then there's, you know, other guys like Matt McClain, Otto Lopez, you know, Luis Garcia Jr., who can offer some, like, you know, double-digit homers and steals as well. But I think Bryson Stott is the guy who could maybe get you a little bit more than just, you know, 15 steals, 15 homers, and can at least get you an okay average as well.
Yeah, Lau and McClain are, like, kind of the last guys, you know, that I feel somewhat decent about as my starting second baseman. Jorge Polanco, Otto Lopez, I don't think so. Gleyber Torres is actually, I think he's like the last ditch starting second baseman option. Projections absolutely love him.
Yes.
He was solid last year. I think he played through a sports hernia and he got surgery in the offseason. So you'd hope that he's a little bit more productive from a power perspective this year. And then I guess his Marcus Semien is not all that different from Gleyber Torres. And he, you know, is going to be in a good lineup in New York. So yeah, I do think that the position really kind of levels out. So if you don't get, you know, one of the top couple guys or you just don't really like them, you don't have to necessarily reach. But at the same time, I had a draft where I took Nico Horner and Jose Altuve both just because I felt like it was good value and they were outside the top 100 and Jose Altuve has double eligibility. So yeah, I don't think there's not too many guys I'm crossing out at the position. Luke Kuechel, the inflation is a little scary. I think he's maybe my biggest fade at the position, but it's not because I think he's bad. It's more just the offense is middling and he doesn't have great power. And I don't think he's a 300 hitter, even though I know he hit like 300 last year.
Yeah, it was through 180 at bats, right? Like obviously, like, I want Kuechel to do well, right? He's on the Twins. But, you know, I think what a lot of people are comparing him to, which I think is maybe a little bit accurate, is that he's just kind of like Nico Horner, right? That's kind of the type of player that he is. And, you know, but I think it's like, we need to see it though, right? Mm-hmm. Like you could tell me he's Nico Horner, but until he actually does it, right? Like, that's where, you know, that's where I'll believe. But, yeah, I mean, 14 steals and 180 at bats, right? It's easy to project that out and say that he's going to be like a 30 base stealer at least, right? And maybe gets double digit homers. And if he doesn't get that, then, you know, yeah, great. At his price, then that probably makes a lot of sense. But I don't think we've seen that just yet from him.
Right. And he has always been an efficient base stealer. So at least, you know, he does have that going for him. It's just, yeah, for me, it's like, what's the difference between Bryson Stott and Luke Kuechel? I think it's just batting average is really the answer. Like, Luke Kuechel is almost definitely going to hit for a better batting average, but I don't think that the gap is wide enough to, you know, make up the whatever 50 pick difference in ADP.
Yeah. Yeah. I was hoping to kind of grab him, but he went a little earlier than I would have liked. So there's that.
Yeah. I think he's looks like 1.8, 1.19 in my draft. Like, I can't get behind that.
Yeah. I did want to kind of talk about some guys who kind of have the biggest ADP difference between, you know, where they're going in TGFBI versus where they're going in NFC. And then the NFC data also is kind of like the composite from like the last like 3 months. So it's not the best in terms of like, okay, how is it reacting to the market currently? So that's why some of these are going to be pretty different. One of the big interesting names though, Daniel Palencia, going 28 picks earlier than ADP. So basically going two rounds earlier in this case. I think this is more just a reaction to closer value than anything else. Obviously like Palencia is kind of in that third, fourth tier. I don't know. It's, you know, it's kind of muddy how you just define tiers, but, he's not in the top tier closers, but he's, you know, not in the bottom tier as well. He could, you know, easily get 20, 25 saves, I think for him. So that's probably why there's a little bit of bump there. Eugenio Suarez, I think this bump is just mostly because he wasn't signed for a good period of when that ADP was happening in NFC, so he's going up. Bregman, I think, just kind of a similar thing. Mikel Garcia is the interesting one, going basically a whole round earlier, and I think that's maybe a reaction to people just wanting to get in on the good third baseman, and, you know, trying to pick him a little bit earlier than expected. But kind of the conversation we were having with Austin Riley about like kind of his value. Do you see Garcia as a guy who should be in similar value to Riley, or should he be going still like a round or two after him?
I'm okay with him going in the same spot. Like, most of the drafts I've been in, like, Kel Garcia has been going before Austin Riley, which obviously they're different players in terms of team build, but I don't really get that personally. I think the power ceiling with Mikel Garcia is pretty low. The rest of it's good though. But he doesn't hit the ball in the air, really. And I know they moved the fences in, and, like, people are getting excited about that. But I don't know. I think that he is a little bit overpriced. And that's, you know, I'm keeping him in my keeper league, right? He's, like, $10 player, and he has multiple eligibility in Yahoo. So I like Mikel Garcia. I just think that the helium is it's a little bit, you know, out of control at this point. I would pick Austin Riley over him. But, again, it is a team preference thing. But, yeah, a lot of these guys are – or third baseman, right? There's three straight third basemen that you said there. And, you know, maybe some of that's the Westberg injury is thinning things out even more.
Yeah.
I really don't like Noelvi Marte, so that shrinks the pool for me even more at third base. So I can get pushing these guys up the board a little bit. I just don't think Mikel Garcia is going to be the one for me.
Yeah. A couple other interesting names, Luis Robert Jr., Teoscar Hernandez, both going about a round earlier. You know, I think maybe that's a little bit of Robert getting traded to the Mets. That's why there's a little bit of a bump there. With Teo, not sure what could be leading to a bump there for him. I mean, if anything, he got a new teammate in Kyle Tucker in that time. That I don't know if that's going to impact his spot in the lineup. But I mean, he is a guy that I would have loved to target, but I think he's going a little bit higher than I would have liked. I would have loved drafting him at ADP, but I think a round earlier, I'm not going for that.
Yeah, he's definitely climbing. I think it's a projections thing. Maybe he, you know, as a guy who I use projections a lot in my drafts, it's like him and Yandy Diaz are like at the top of the dollar values.
Yeah.
Probably once like the top 100 players are off the board, right? So, yeah. You know, I don't push them up too much at 80, but I'm happy to get them at ADP. You know, Teoscar, another guy looking for a bounce back season. I think he did play through some injuries last year, so I get it. I think, you know, pick 130, something like that. I'm interested if he starts getting, you know, more like pick 115, 110. You know, at that point it does, you know, get a little bit too high for me, but I do understand it. You know, he's kind of a really stable even last year, you know, people say he was bad, but he still had 25 homers and 89 RBIs and 5 steals. So, like, that's not, you know, that's nothing to sneeze at.
Yeah, I had him as, well, I had him ranked at basically like 127 on my composite rankings. And his min pick was 102 in TGFBI so far. So, yeah, but a lot of interesting numbers there for sure. In terms of kind of guys that are going later, a lot of these are injury related. So Josh Hader, Joe Ryan, both going a little bit later. Spencer Strider, I think people have been reacting a little bit to his low spring training velocity a little bit. I'm curious if, how you feel about Strider. I did not want to touch him because I just don't feel safe about, A, he's still a two-pitch pitcher at the end of the day. If he doesn't have the velocity on the fastball, like, that still hurts him a lot. But, yeah, is Strider a guy that you would want to target in drafts right now?
No, almost definitely not. We were talking about him in the Discord today, and it's like such a narrative thing, right? His first spring training start, he was sitting like 93 and everyone's freaking out.
Yep.
And then today he was sitting 95 and some people are like, see, he's fine. And I'm like, well, last year he sat 95.5 and he was bad. So like, we basically need Spencer Strider to be sitting 97 in order for him to be good, not to be great, but like just to be good. So it's just a high bar to clear. Obviously, the upside, it could be huge, right? Like, maybe he's just really taking it easy and he's going to be close to, you know, the guy he was in his peak a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I just, the ratio risk is a little bit too much for me. But I'll definitely be continuing to monitor his spring training starts closely. But I think it was, we were talking about a 24 fastballs he threw today. He got no whiffs and one called strike. So 5%, 4% CSW. Like, his fastball used to be his pitch, right? So yeah. I'm still pretty concerned.
Yeah. Final name I want to talk about, Carlos Estevez. So his ADP is 80, according to NFC. And he's still available in my draft at pick 150. Just insane. This is a guy who led the league in saves last year, but he's been averaging like in the 80s, high 80s, low 90s in his fastball in spring training. Is this just a guy who is warming up, or is there some serious concerns here with drafting Estevez?
Yeah, this one is crazy. Like, he's down 7 miles per hour from last year. Like, is he just, I don't know why he's pitching in games if he's just going to throw 89, right? This doesn't really make sense. I was so out on him to begin with just because he always outperforms his peripherals and I can't get behind it. So I think I'm just going to continue to be out even at the depressed price. I also, like, I don't, it's hard to not overreact, but like, I remember last year, Robert Suarez like barely pitched in spring training and everyone was like, what's going on with him? Where is he? And then he had an awesome season. Right. So yeah, maybe at the point in your draft where you're at and given how much closers are inflated, I'd start thinking about it. Right. I wouldn't feel good clicking on his name, but you know, with that big of a price discount, I guess I would be open to it. But yeah, I think I'm really looking hard at other options before reluctantly drafting him, even at a discount.
Yeah. I mean, he is technically one of the last few guys who could probably get you 30 saves. It's him. Robert Suarez is still on the board, but he's kind of fighting with Raisel Iglesias for that, for the saves there. So I think Suarez is a little bit of a stay away. McGill, who knows what's going on with him and Uribe in Milwaukee. And then after that, it's like Will Vest. Like, he's fighting with Kenley Jansen for saves. Tanner Scott's not getting any saves anymore. You know, it's a bunch of guys who, like, legitimately, like, could... Everything could work out and they could just not get 30 because of their team context. But Estevez feels like the last one where it's like, he might be able to get 30 saves still. So, I might be forced to pick him if he keeps dropping. But knowing Rick Graham is picking and, like, 15 picks, I feel like he's going to be gone soon.
Yeah, I think it would have to get to like him versus like Sir Anthony Dominguez for me to think about picking Carlos Estevez.
Really?
Like,
that far? Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I'm picking Griffin Jacks over him, I think. Like, Ryan Walker.
Yeah.
Ryan Walker is close, I guess, but yeah, I just don't see that he's going to come out his next spring training outing and be sitting 95. Like, it seems like he's just so far off, right? You don't overreact to every spring training velocity reading, but the gap here is just so huge, and he's not the most dominant skills pitcher to begin with, so it's pretty concerning.
I'm begging my draft to just let me get Griffin Jacks in round 12. That's all I want. That's all I
want. Yeah, I mean, I'm surprised he's still there given how much the closers got pushed up.
Yeah, I mean, it's also weird because his ADP data, he's currently 199, but that's just, you know, NFC composite data. So I didn't pick him here because I was like, I need starting pitching, but I really hope Jacks falls to me. Anyways, that's enough wish casting. That's going to be it for today's episode. I think next time we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about your OC draft and kind of maybe your experience there and what you're hoping to learn kind of going into your next OC draft. But yeah, you can find us on Twitter at ThisWeekPL. You can send us your comments and questions at ThisWeekPLPod@gmail.com. You can find myself on Twitter at TheJohnCo. You can find Patrick at PFitzgerald_99. If you haven't done so already, please subscribe to the Pitcherless podcast feed on Apple, Spotify, YouTube, wherever you listen to your podcasts. Leave us a 5-star review if you enjoy the show. Lastly, sign up for Pitcherless Pro. By doing so, you can join us in the Discord, just as Patrick was talking about, have a little bit of conversation about Spencer Strider, how you feel about him and his velocity, but get advice from all the fantasy experts and writers over there. Also, we just released a new Twitter account, Pitcherless Stats, which is going nuts, apparently. But we are, there was some controversy on the stuff numbers. We are fixing that. So, you know, shout out to Kyle, our director of analytics, for being on top of that and getting stuff squared away. But yeah, definitely check out all the stuff that Pitchless is doing in draft season. And also just as we go into the regular season, definitely going to be a lot of content coming out. But that's all for this week. We'll be back next week with another episode of This Week in Fantasy Baseball. For Patrick, I'm John, and we'll see you in the next one. Later, everyone. We'll be right back.